SheenaMetalExperience.com. Don't forget to email me and let me know what you think of the show. Both of my guests this hour are making their debut. They are part of a wonderful new show at the Odyssey Theater called Waiting for Grace. Please welcome Sharon Sharth is here and Mark Bryan. Welcome both of you. How are you both?
Thank you. We're great.
It's hi, great. Sheena. Great to have you both here. Both of you are involved in the show. Did I say that right?
No.
Mark's
no,
not involved
really.
In the show?
I'm sort of this, I carry her luggage.
Oh. No.
You're just the manservant slash
man
valet
servant.
Yes.
I'll tell you exactly.
All right, we're going to get the whole scoop, everybody.
You're gonna start writing. Okay, so I was an actor, right?
Okay.
And then I was
at
with
Circle Repertory,
at Circle Repertory Theater Company in New York.
Okay.
With, and two of the other actresses in the play, Waiting for Grace, Pamela Dunlap and Lily Knight, are both also from Circle Rep, as is our director, Lee Castella.
Okay. And Lee, I know from Ensemble Studio Theater LA.
Yes! Oh, yeah,
I've been on their board of directors for over 5 years. So.
Oh, my God!
True story.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, she's fantastic.
Well, God, I know them, you know, EST from New York for years. Anyway, when I moved out here, my first job was at the Old Globe Theater down in San Diego.
Oh, wow.
And I was doing Lost Highway about Hank Williams and his wife Audrey, and I was Audrey. And we were about, I think, 2 weeks into the show, and my co-star hit my jaw, and my jaw went across my face like a typewriting, you know, a typewriter thing. What do you call those
carriage.
Things? Yeah. Yeah. And
did it ding?
Oh, that's very good.
It was in a melee on stage. He didn't just swack.
No, we had just started the show. I was about to sing my first song. The thing is, Audrey was a terrible singer, so I always was a little off key. But my mouth wouldn't open. I could only keep it open, you know, I could only open it a little bit. So I finished the show with my mouth only being able to, you know. And then luckily it was a Sunday night, so I got in my car and I put ice on it and drove back up here. And for the next 10 years, I was putting my jaw back in place. Not me, doctors were. And
was it broken?
It was dislocated.
Okay.
Yeah. But anyway, so I was told that I needed to do something else, that it was either going to freeze open or freeze closed, and that I needed to find another career. So I started writing. I actually didn't start writing a play. I was out of the business. I had decided that, you know, I was out, and my family's full of journalists. I thought, well, let's see if I can write. And I started writing children's books. I've written 16 children's books, nonfiction. And then all of a sudden I started writing this thing because I wanted to get married and have children, and I couldn't do it. I saw Pat Allen out there on your wall.
A lot of people notice her and say things about it.
So I started writing this thing because I wanted to get married and I couldn't. So, and I wrote a one-act play and had a bunch of my friends from Circle Repertory Theater Company do it. We did it at Pacific Resident Theater, just the first act. And it was just the first act. It was just about how I wanted to get married and have children but couldn't. Wrong guys or the right guys, but I was picking guys who weren't available because the truth was I wasn't available, but I didn't know that.
Commitment-phobic men in New York City or in L.A.?
Hmm. Yeah.
I just think in humanity, right?
Yeah.
Just commitment-phobic humans.
Yeah, that's right. Absolutely.
Right. So I wrote, and everybody loved it and said, oh, write more. And then I met this man.
Okay.
And he was very different from anybody else I'd ever been with. But
I have two legs and two arms. I'm not that.
No.
Now, did you two meet looking? Were you both looking for relationships, or was it kind of a happenstance meeting?
I wasn't looking for a relationship. I was traveling on a book tour, and I knew, I had seen her because we had mutual friends, and I knew not to go near her because I wouldn't have a chance, you know? I'd end up married, so I didn't.
Sure.
For, a dozen times I must have seen you across the room or whatever. And then I was right. When I did finally meet her, I went home that night and told my assistant I just met the woman I'm going to marry.
Isn't that beautiful? And then it happened.
And it happened.
Yeah.
Isn't that wonderful? Now, are you
it's both still going on?
you met here.
Yes.
Okay. Are you a New Yorker originally, Sharon? Where are you from?
Buffalo.
Okay. So yes.
Yeah. But then I spent years in Manhattan. Yeah.
Mark, what about you? Where are you from originally?
I'm a West Virginia hillbilly originally.
Really?
Scotch Irish miners and
London. Oh, I love it.
Yeah, and then Chicago.
You're the only one without the black lung.
That's right. Yes.
In the family, sure.
Well, I have heard that hacking from relatives.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I had a friend who prided himself. I'm the first one in the family not to get the black lung.
Wow.
Yeah. So I know that very well, that whole Appalachia scene.
Sure.
In fact, my grandfather Frank is buried in the same cemetery as Devil Ants Hatfield.
Oh.
From the Hatfield McCoys. And it's a very small little private cemetery.
Yeah. My mom was from Louisville, Kentucky originally. So.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
We had people in Louisville.
Granddaughter of the South.
Say.
Yeah. It's a place where a lot of Irish people went and stayed.
That's right. Yeah, right. Exactly.
Wow. I love that. Okay. So how long
have you... spent a lot of years in Chicago.
Okay.
And then... I got to L.A. because I started, I developed The Artist's Way with Julia Cameron. It was originally our teaching notes, if you
right.
know that book.
Absolutely.
Then,
who doesn't know that?
And then I moved here in 1996 and then back. And then we met in 2000 and were married in 2002. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Now, do you consider yourself mostly a writer, Mark, or do you consider yourself more of a speaker? I mean, where does your heart sort of lie?
More of a consultant and a facilitator. Actually, not even a consultant, a facilitator.
Okay.
Doing group dynamic stuff. And I love to be in front of a group of artists and working with creative people of any of their fields. And you know, I had known of Circle Repertory, but I didn't know of Sharon or her work there. I didn't know that she'd, you know, originated 14 leading roles on and off Broadway for great, you know, playwrights, Bill Master Simone or Aaron Sorkin. And so she knew me, but I didn't really know about her acting career. So we got married before I ever saw her on stage.
Oh, really?
Which was really interesting because she was known in New York as an actor's actor. So that was kind of fun. And then when she first got the reading of the first act play, and I saw what kind of talent she could gather from her friends on stage. It was amazing. And I thought, oh, my God. And she's good. She's really good.
That's wonderful.
He has to say that.
Now, how long was your break, Sharon, that you weren't on stage?
Oh, about 12 years.
Wow. So was it, what was it
like? I did a little bit of television.
Okay.
There. But I really was out and happy to be out.
Yeah. And I'm happy being a writer.
Yes.
But what was it like to go back? What did it feel like to be sort of immersed energetically in all of that again?
Yes. Well, what happened was that I did this play, and I came home one night and I said to Mark, wow, I feel so fulfilled. And I have not felt that for all these years that I've not been acting. So it really was where I needed to be on stage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and she started getting some local roles, Woman in Mind, the old Alan Eichborn. And she did that at the Sierra Madre Playhouse. And then you and Jane Kaczmarek and Gregory Harrison did Snake Can.
Right.
At the Odyssey. And that play.
Your publicist.
I know. Isn't he great?
Isn't he wonderful?
I can't sell myself, but I sure know what she's doing.
I think you've been sold okay. I think it's gone okay for you, Mark. So is this your first play?
Yes.
Okay. That's exciting, right?
Yeah.
What was the transition like between writing books and writing a play? Was it difficult or was it easy? Or
well, it just came out. I didn't mean for it to. I didn't really want it to. I was out of the business. I didn't know what I was doing, but I just started writing this thing that became a play. And so it just came out. It had nothing to do with me, really. I wasn't thinking about it or anything. It just happened. And
well, there were some things that bother you about men and women and the way some stars talk about having children late in life. And I know that was upsetting to you.
Oh, well, this is part of the stuff that's in the play.
The idea of having children late in life, or just...
Well, the claim that so many Hollywood celebrities are having children after age 30, 43 or 44.
Yeah, even
more
now.
That aren't surrogates or donor eggs. It just is a lie, basically.
Oh,
yeah.
Are you upset that you miss kids? Is that something that's hard for you?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And I mean, we tried.
Do you not want to adopt somebody?
Well, that's what I suggested, but no, we didn't.
Instead, we went to Africa and worked for the United Nations on HIV/AIDS for 3 years.
That's beautiful.
In Africa, so
yeah, went to service instead. I sort of always feel like maybe someday I'll adopt some. Mm-hmm. And my mom was adopted as an older child, orphaned, and then adopted when she was almost 14.
Wow.
So she always used to say right before she turned 12, but I just, in her passing, going through her house this year, found her adoption certificate, and I was like, kind of adding it up. I'm like, she was almost, she was 13 and a half. Aww. She was even older than she thought she was.
Ouch. I'm sorry and, you lost your mom.
Oh, thank you, sweetheart. She was the best. You would have loved her. She was tough and awesome and kind. But, yeah, so I figure, well, you know what? If I got a couple of 13-year-olds, I wouldn't be that much older, would I? I mean, I'd almost be like a young mom.
I'm
thinking that I might do that at some point. I mean, it's never too late to do that if that's what you want.
That's right.
Right now, I only adopt things under 15 pounds. But
for us, it's 50. But I.
But that's really more for them, because I had a stay-at-home mom that was, you know, really an ass kicker and was amazing. And I don't want to be any less than that. But I belong to the world. So I don't know that I necessarily, you know, we'll see.
Yeah.
But you never say never.
Right, right.
Because you never know.
Sure.
And there's so many kids out there that need homes that are not babies.
Yes.
I don't want a baby. I want it once they're past the singing that song from Frozen stage. I don't want little tiny.
Oh.
So you never have to worry. It's never over. I guess that's my point. You got to go to Africa. Did you touch an elephant?
We saw elephants. But they were we only saw a few elephants. We didn't see them.
I think there's only a few left, sadly.
I know. But we saw everything else.
What's happening over there?
We saw the other animals. But
lots of kids. But even if we wanted to adopt a kid with HIV, we couldn't bring it into the United States.
Oh, that doesn't seem fair.
They have really strict rules around that stuff.
Yeah.
Unless you're a very, very wealthy person, I guess.
Yeah. So
but it also was really amazing, because it was really in the time when the HIV crisis was so big in Southern Africa. And it was like you would go 1, 2, 3 dying, 1, 2, 3 dying. You know?
Yeah.
It was, we just came home and just cried.
Well, because there was no medication. I mean, that's what it was like here in the early 80s, right?
That's right.
For those of us that lived through it.
That's right.
Until they got the right medications.
That's
without the medications, that disease takes you fast.
Yeah.
They hadn't solved the mother-to-child transmission yet, which they are now really good at. But
right.
When we were there at the first trip, 2003-2004, that hadn't happened yet. So there were an awful lot of, you know, 9-year-old orphans whose lesson from their mother was how to dig her grave.
Oh, man.
It's quite something.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's, well, good
on a
for
happier
you.
Note.
For going to do that.
Well, and there's a lot of great people working in there. I want to say a shout out to the Gates Foundation and to the United Nations. You know, they take a lot of flack. They do amazing work in some of the most difficult conditions on Earth.
I mean, all of those organizations that we like to knock and judge.
Yeah.
It's like, well, you spend your time doing that.
Mm.
Also, we saw a lot of young actors troops that were passing on the HIV messages and the kind of...
it's very important.
And it was really great. So you see acting in a big range of areas.
Isn't
and sharing
right
was
now?
Great with the orphans, and sometimes the arts get translated in a whole other place.
Did you want to bring one home? Did you think about
yes.
it?
Yes. Oh,
dozen.
There was that. Yeah, but that one little girl, and her mom was dying, and she was maybe a year and a half old.
Yeah, there's some beautiful children.
Oh, gorgeous.
And adults.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, orphans are a thing that break my heart. They're a thing I have a hard time with, I think, because I grew up with an adult orphan and saw sort of that emotional and spiritual patterning on her from that and what that kind of does to a person.
Right.
So I can't go to people like, come visit me at cat adoption day. I'm like, no. No, because I will bring a U-Haul and pack all those things in the back, and I'll just take everybody, and that's not a good idea.
Yeah,
because I can't give everybody a good life.
Yeah,
but boy, the idea of just being knee deep in cats and dogs that need homes, and then the second half piled with children—it's a
that sounds great
love
to me.
Order.
I love that. That sounds like heaven.
I just want
that.
Someone said I just host radio shows and have a huge creative tribe.
We have three dogs at one time that she rescued all three of them over the first couple years of our marriage. And there's only one left now, but she's one of the reasons I fell in love with her is watching her with her dog, Shadow, who's passed now. But she is so kind. And
we're waiting for some more dogs, though. They come off the street, so we're just waiting for some more.
They come when they're supposed to, right?
Yes.
When I was working at home a lot, and I had a lot of time at home, and I was living with people romantically, so I had someone there to take care of them with me. At one point, I had a dog, four cats, a guinea pig, and two rabbits. Now that I'm a workaholic and I'm single, I'm down to one, and no one comes. And I think it's because I just don't have time to take care of one right now.
Yeah.
So, unfortunately, the one that's still alive is a little disgruntled that she's the last of them all. But
is it a cat?
It's a cat, Molly. Beautiful. She's my best buddy. But they do come, right?
Yes.
At one point, my mom said, I think there's a cat head in the sky that just says, y'all come under it. They find you like the wise men found Jesus.
Aww.
But they don't find me anymore. I think that's because I'm in my workplace.
Yes,
now.
Yes.
What was going on in your life, Sharon, when you started this play?
Well, as I said, I wanted to get married and have children, and I just couldn't figure out how to do it. So, and one of the things I did was I went to see Pat Allen.
Wow, who's here at LA Talk Radio?
And Pat Allen, I mean, you have to come to the play because it's...
Is she in the play?
Is someone
Pat Allen-ish?
Yes,
in the play?
Yes, yes, yes.
Pat Allen adjacent?
Yes, yes, exactly. And I do say this, and I say this to people. I got married because of Pat Allen.
Wow,
that's fantastic. But it's really true.
Was it something in you that you needed to change energetically in you, or was it something? Was there just advice you weren't getting and she had the right advice? How did that happen?
It was a little of both. It was, first of all, I was picking unavailable men because I was unavailable. I was unavailable because it was too risky to actually commit and have what I kept saying. I just want to get married and have children. I just want to get married and have children. But it never happened. And Pat would say, she'd... don't talk. Smile at them. Let them approach you. You don't approach them.
Right.
All the basic things that I didn't know how to do that. I mean, I'm older. So that's not what we do. And yet, I couldn't get married because I would start talking first. I'd pick the guy. And it was a guy who I didn't really want to marry.
You just wanted to sleep with.
We are Irish. We're genetically pre-designed to make more children in any way we can. Even if we're no children will come from it, we still just want to go through the motions because it's kind of our action.
That's
like
right.
A chihuahua humping a table leg. It's just what the Irish do. It's that or getting a fight in a bar. So, but don't you think also you're a rescuer? I mean, you go to Africa, you want to take a kid home. You want to take home every dog and every cat that you see. Those of us that are rescuers, we make the mistake of rescuing people in our lives.
Yes.
And that can be as partners, it can be as friends, it can be as family. I finally had to, literally, like I said, nobody over 15 pounds would I rescue anymore.
Yeah.
Because people don't always want to be rescued. And when you go from an approach of a rescuer, sometimes you're rescuing somebody that's really just looking for the act of the rescue, but doesn't really want anything past that.
Right.
And you're constantly giving and giving and giving and giving. It's just who we naturally are. It's what we do.
Yeah. I had a therapist in the early years who used to say, you know, you like guys who lean against walls. And then when they get with you, they start leaning against you.
Yeah.
So, you know.
But that's not good. But this one doesn't? This nice Irish boy?
No, he doesn't.
Okay.
Yeah.
But was it hard for you to get used to him because he actually wanted to contribute and
again,
meet you halfway?
This is in the play, Waiting for Grace, because he was giving me gifts. And I, what do you, like, big gifts.
Like he was a stalker or insane?
No, I
might have been insane, but I wasn't a stalker.
But I did say to Pat Allen, he's crazy. He asked me to marry him after 2 months. And I said, what should I say? And Pat said, say yes.
Wow.
Say yes. 2 months. I said, I don't know him. She said, yeah, but that doesn't matter. You can't hurry an engagement. You can only hurry a wedding.
Oh.
So you can be engaged for as long as you need to be to get to know him.
And how long were you engaged?
2 years.
Almost two years.
Oh, that's a nice long engagement.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So what
it's
about,
all in the play.
What about for you as she sort of gotten her poop in a group, so to speak, and found out what she really wanted? Were you on that same journey of sort of becoming the best you, Mark?
Yes, I was.
You could have what you wanted as well?
Yeah, I was continual. You know, I wrote self-help books, mostly about stuff I was struggling with, family relationships. That was Codes of Love, and I used to reunite families on the Oprah show and that kind of stuff, and from based on my books. And I kind of, for the first time in my life, I had a, you know, the things that all the women I used to know would set as criteria for the guys they dated. He has to have a house, a job, and a car, And so I had a house, a job, and a car. And
but that's a horrible criteria.
Graduate degree.
And, I mean, everyone should have a house, a job, and a car. And a graduate degree would be nice, although I myself don't have one, so how could I ask for you to have one? But when women say that, I always say, is that all you want? Like, is that it?
Yeah.
That, to me, that doesn't sound like the epitome of spiritual fulfillment.
No.
You know, that's a line in the play where a therapist says to me, I want to get married. She says, is that all you want? And you know what my answer is? No, I want world peace and clean water for every human being on the planet. And I want a man who will take care of me. There, I said it. The thing no woman is supposed to say.
And you got a man that would take care of you.
Well, and I take care of him, too.
Okay, I don't know that's true. I want someone to take care of me, but I just would like somebody who would be gentle with my soul.
Yes.
Do you know? I mean, I don't need your money, and I don't need your house. I have all that stuff.
Right.
But I find
that
there...
She did, too. She had her own place.
Yeah, there's so many people who just... aren't gentle with each other's hearts.
Yes.
And I don't know who raised them or what they want, but they definitely don't seem to want what I want. And I've noticed in my life, as I've gone through that year where you lose your only family member, which is that's a thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know how to say it because I don't quite know what it is, where you start to think about who's gentle with my heart. And I've started to sort of move some people out of my life and some people closer in, depending on really their level of gentleness and kindness. And I think when I was younger, I was very impressed with talent and intelligence, and you know,
me too.
Now I'm just impressed with how kind are you. It's really, really what it's all about in the end.
And I saw her be really kind with her dog Shadow.
See?
And I thought, if I can get her to be as kind to me she is to that dog, that might be really
and you lucked
thing.
Out. Because some people are wonderful to their dogs and treat people like crap. So you're very lucky that she was also wonderful with you.
That's right. And we've, 14 years now, so that's good.
It's beautiful.
We made it that far.
Yeah.
Including past 9/11 and past...
Right. Was that a hard time for couples, do you think?
I think it was a hard time for everybody in America.
I think that the country is still dealing with the repressed melancholia from that.
Yeah, and I think anytime there's financial struggles within
which
a family,
we've had nothing but.
Right, nothing but really in those years. So those have been issues, and I wish I had... There's times when I wish I was a kinder, better man, you know? I mean, nobody is perfect, and I'm not either.
I think you're a very kind man.
We've worked.
Yes, you've been very warm and squishy since you came here. And this is a super warm and squishy place, and not everybody makes the cut. A lot of people are like, what is she talking about? And none of it interests me. So I just thought I was coming to plug my thing. I did not sign up for a whole spiritual discussion.
We like spiritual discussion.
But you come here in my woo-woo den, and you're kind of stuck with me.
Hey, we love that.
Do you think he's a kind man?
Absolutely.
I don't think he gives himself enough credit for how kind he is.
Yes, you're right. Yep.
I think that maybe...
He's an incredibly generous, loving, kind man. Yes.
Very warm. Warmth kind of comes off of you.
And for those of you who know me out there, please give us this leeway. Without lighting up social media to give us your opinion.
Oh, no. Why do you think people would light up social media?
Oh, I'm just... I saw Eric Holder today. I'm sorry to digress, but I think Sharon's play, the Waiting for Grace play, blends perfectly, you know, the ideals of the feminist movement with the ideals of, you know, marriage and life together as a man and woman. And that's a very tough, you know, tightrope to walk, and she does it really well in the play. And the idea of kindness... It just strikes me that social media has gotten so brutal that that's why I'm teasing, really. But Eric Holder today had something about the election, and I was looking at this man who was, you know, I mean, he's a genius and a very talented attorney, and he's gotten the things that people are willing and do say online is striking to me. It's really
I think
sad
that this election...
Scary.
Every time I say this election in my head, I hear like thunder and lightning, like the, you know, like the, yeah, like the Cloris Leachman character from Young Frankenstein, with the horses. I think what it has shown us, unfortunately, is that there really are two very distinct groups of people in the world. Doesn't really have anything to do with your political party or your class or your race or your culture. It has to do with, are you about unity or are you about division? Are you about things that encourage everyone to come together, or are you about things that tear everybody apart? Mm-hmm. And I think we're seeing on both sides of the political spectrum people that are working towards unity and people that are interested in, oh, now's my chance to really be, now my chance to go on Facebook and put everything I hate and everybody I ever hated, and irregardless of the sensitive emotional climate that a lot of people are going through right now.
Right.
And I think there a lot of the people that are so divided or so angry are the union workers and some of the people that just have, you know, really gotten the short end of the stick.
Sure.
You know, my brother was a union coal miner for years, and so I appreciate the unions. And
And when my grandmother worked in an assembly line before there were unions.
Yeah.
And died because of it.
Yeah, and when you break, people forget the unions are so important, and I think we'll see if... President-elect Trump.
Yeah, I can't even say
it's
can't
hard,
even say it yet.
It's hard to even say.
I can say president-elect.
Yeah.
I can say the two names in a sentence at separate times. I can't yet put them together.
Yeah, it's a little surreal for me.
But I'm hoping, because I'm an optimistic person, that what will come from this is we will learn what it is that we don't want. And there will be some unification in that.
And there is that distant prayer that the office will lift him into a different place.
Well, I think we're seeing by the cabinet choices, not so much.
Not so much. I mean, when he put Myron Ebell in as head of the EPA.
Apparently, draining the swamp means going and getting your own swamp and bringing it in a flatbed.
Yeah.
Replacing the swamp is, I think, what it actually is. You drain your pool and fill it up with the same water, just it's your water.
Which reminds me kind of the play, in a sense that because it keeps
coming back to it.
It's wonderful.
Well, because it really is.
He's done this before.
There are people in the audience that are from the Trump camp.
Sure.
And there's people in the audience that are from the other camp.
Absolutely.
And some from another planet. But they all get this because it's a basic human experience.
Well, and not to get political, but now I am for a second. What a fascinating time, Sharon, to be doing a play about women's issues.
Yes.
Because now more than ever, we have realized that maybe we don't have the equality we thought we even had.
Yes.
And that there is something about being a woman and trying to be equal, that then suddenly you obviously must be a criminal or the devil, or why would you be a woman seeking any kind of equality?
Right.
And I think, I don't know how other women feel. I have many women who supported our current president-elect friends, but I don't know how you could not feel right now like, whoa, we got some work to do.
Ooh, yeah.
And even more than in the world of racism or of homophobia, I think misogyny is something that we just don't look at.
Yes, yes,
and,
I agree with you.
And with that comes all these ideas of when a woman should be married and how old is too old and when she should just give it up and what right. kind of man she should expect. And nobody says those kind of things to men.
Right, that's right.
You yeah. know, nobody yeah. looks at a man and says, you know what, you seriously, you went to junior college, you work at a gas station, you can have kind of an unattractive fat woman. I mean, no one says that, but with women, it's this is what you earn for what you have. And it's like, that doesn't make any sense at all.
Right.
But we grow up with that.
Right, exactly.
You can expect this kind of prom date. You can expect this kind of husband based on how desirable you are to humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, we've seen it, right? We've seen it all right under the microscope the last year and a half.
Yeah.
It was just brutal what they did.
And it's horrible. Yeah.
To Clinton.
It breaks my heart.
Me too.
And no matter what we learn from the swamp that has replaced the swamp, it won't change the fact that in her life, this must be devastating. And that kind of breaks my heart all the time.
Sure.
You know? But that somebody has to keep kicking at the door so that somebody else can knock it down. And that's just humanity.
Yes.
I think it'll be Michelle Obama will be our first female president.
I hope that's it's in next. 4 years.
Yeah. I was in 2.5.
And I hope it really, 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 really is kind of a crotch puncher from all of those people that didn't want her, didn't want Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
Because the only thing they fear more than a woman is a woman of color.
That's
so,
sadly.
You know?
That's right, yes.
So rock on, Michelle. I'll start making posters at home.
They are the classiest couple ever to be in
amazing.
The White House.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Although I got to tell you, I'm Team Clinton all the way. That they were my presidents. But, you know, they're... But I love the Obamas too. But there's just, you know, I think we've really seen what women go through.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And in a macrocosmic way, and realize that we've all gone through that in our lives as women.
You know, the other thing too about the play is that, you know, this is a woman, this is about a woman. And most plays, most movies, most television shows are about men.
Yeah.
Written by men, for men, about men. Most of the people who buy tickets for the theater are women, 70%. And yet, it's not their stories that we hear. So that was an important... I mean, I didn't do that on purpose, but now that it's up, I really get, oh, wow, this is a woman's story.
It's wonderful.
Yeah,
so important.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, but you're right, though. I mean, it's women play a lot of girlfriends and moms and sisters and... daughters, and they facilitate the story,
that's
but they're
right.
not the story.
That's right, exactly.
So good for you that you wrote a story that you wanted to see and put friends in it. How are you loving being at the Odyssey?
Loving it.
Isn't it great?
Yes, it is.
It really is a wonderful theater complex.
It is. It's fun. Yeah. Yeah.
And then how long do you run?
We run until...
Should I be asking Mark this instead?
Right. No. We run until December 11th, Thursday through Sunday. Thursday, Friday, Saturday at 8, Sunday at 2. And we may go an extra week.
Good for you.
To the 18th of
December. It's nice that you can do that.
Yeah.
And are you loving just the whole thing?
You know, I just adore, you know, being on stage. You know, I just, and it's not because I want to be seen or get accolades. It's doing the work on stage is so fulfilling to me. And working with these incredible people that have been cast in this play, which are, you know, amazing actors. So it's really been a gift. Yeah.
That's wonderful. How fantastic is that? You're both wonderful. Will you come back and we'll do this again?
Yes.
I love it. We could ask Dr. Pat Allen to come in.
Pat knows us both.
Yeah, Pat, of course he does. Yeah.
But I mean, literally, I have guests in here and sometimes we're out taking a picture and she's in there and they'll say, oh my God, that woman changed my life.
We'll see.
Isn't that fantastic?
Yes.
I'm proud to work here alongside her. And Mark, you also have a radio show, don't you?
I did for a while on KABC, but it was the Artist's Way stuff.
Sure.
And, you know,
did you love it?
My brother John was a producer with me, and And Rhonda Cherney from KABC was helpful in getting that up and running. And Morris Hayes, who was Prince's music director for 15 years, came to play live keyboards for us,
which
was
fantastic.
Great. And Morris is fantastic. And sadly, of course, Prince is gone.
And
you know, that happens too often to really great and to every regular person too, right?
People in this country
are suffering right now.
If we don't put a lid on our prescription painkiller problem,
I agree.
There's not going to be a lot of us left. I think it may be what killed the dinosaurs.
That's right. And
it's actually Percocet, wasn't a comet.
Not a comet. Not an asteroid.
No, not an asteroid.
I do think that the even those kinds of the addiction and opioid addiction and heroin addictions, those are related to the fact that nobody's making the money they used to make, and stress is up for the, you know, divorces are happening more often because of money, and you know, there's just a lot of stress in the system. So that's one more reason to go out to the theater and have some laughs. By the way, it is a comedy.
Oh, it's comedy.
It is a comedy. Sure. We should tell everybody.
Yeah, you know, waiting for I would expect nothing less. From Sharon, she's been smiling and laughing the entire time.
I love her laugh.
I want to die and come back to life as a dog so she can rest. Then I can live with both of you and live on your laps.
I'm going to do that.
Mark, where can people find you online?
You can find me at markbryan.com, and I'm doing a new book on creativity, and I'm getting ready to launch a new web hub because you know, I've written some books on relationships and all of that, and family reunification, and there's
wonderful
a lot of people suffering out there, so
absolutely
anything that we can do to help, we will, and
bless you for your good work,
and
come back and see me again and we'll talk about it. I'd love
it. That'd be great.
Sharon,
you,
where
Sheena.
Can people find you, sweetheart?
When I just have to say, when we got married, my brother said, thank God you've written all those books about relationships.
Isn't that nice?
Yeah, but her friend said when they met me, they said he's either the greatest guy we ever met or a serial killer.
I said you were a stalker. That means I'm either insane or a little psychic.
SharonSharth.com.
Wonderful.
WaitingForGrace.com.
Fantastic. Yeah. Do it, people. If you missed that, SheenaMetalExperience.com, LATalkRadio.com. Send me an email, and I will gladly forward the links to you. On social media, I'm at Sheena Metal everywhere, and it's the Sheena Metal Experience on LA Talk Radio. And you know what we do here, people? Every Monday through Friday, 5 to 7 p.m. Pacific time, we rip the veil off the human sideshow and expose those big old homo sapiens at their most bizarre and every day and always, of course, and absolutely at their very most beautiful. And you know, it's my show, and that's true, my friends, but what it really is, it's your experience. Thanks for listening. Have a great night. I'll see y'all tomorrow right here on LA Talk Radio.
Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.